I'm Chris Reback. This is BCRF Conversations, our series focusing on scientists, thinkers, and leaders who drive the insights and breakthroughs of breast cancer research. Among the many powerful and intriguing things that Dr. Karen Anderson told me during our terrific conversation, vaccines have changed the course of human events. This line, combined with the inspiration Dr. Anderson felt when completing her studies, helped lead her to the important and challenging work she does now. Breast cancer vaccine development, with the long-range goal to deliver vaccines to reduce the risk of breast cancer recurrence after surgery. Dr. Anderson is a translational researcher at the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State University, with a joint appointment as a breast cancer medical oncologist at Mayo Clinic, Arizona. Her research focuses on how the immune system can be harnessed to detect and alter cancer development. Dr. Anderson also is a current member of the NCI Cancer Biomarker Study Section and has published over 40 peer-reviewed publications. But let's get to the obvious question. What's a translational researcher? That's where our conversation began. Dr. Anderson, thanks for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited about this.
So I've seen you described as a translational researcher at the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State, as well as a bunch of other titles and affiliations. But what is a translational researcher? Does that mean that you can help make this intense science understandable for the rest of us?
Well, I hope so. A translational researcher is someone who focuses on questions about human disease, where we try to understand what's going on in patients and take that back to the lab, try to refine it, and then really have an impact in terms of patient care. We try to translate the science into clinical practice.
Really putting the patient, it sounds like, at the center of what you're doing, not so much science for science sake, but with a real eye on the person and the patient at the center of it. Is that right?
Absolutely.
You focus on how the immune system can be harnessed to detect and alter cancer development. That's one of your areas. Tell me about what that means. How does one harness a person's immune system, not only to detect, but also, importantly, to alter cancer development?
Well, cancer immunotherapy is a really hot topic right now in cancer research. And one thing that we've learned over the years is that cancers don't evolve in a vacuum. They evolve in the setting of people's immune systems. So they have had to develop ways to evade that. And so there are a whole different sets of mechanisms in how the cancers are trying to evade the immune system. It's like a cat and mouse, right? And as those tumors try to evade the immune system is trying to fight them off. Because cancer is an altered self, right? It is ourselves, but we're different. And so those cells are different. They have different proteins. They have different mutations. They have alterations in those proteins. And the immune system can see that. And what we're trying to do is trying to rev that back up. How do you create better T cells, better parts of the immune system that then can see the cancer and then can try to help eliminate it?
Where are the key challenges? Are the key challenges on, and this is going to be overly simplistic, so correct me on this, but are the challenges of what you just described more on the, let's say, the tumor side, understanding what's going on there, what changes are taking place? I loved that description you just gave, that it's our cells, but it's our altered selves, versus challenges in understanding the immune side. What's reactivating that? What needs to be reactivated? How does that get, you know, harnessed or amped up? Or can the two not be separated? Are they hand in hand? And understanding one, or the challenges on one side fit perfectly or neatly or challengingly with the challenges on the other side?
Boy, it's a great question. It is really both. Fundamentally, look, the strength of the immune system is about the diversity of the response. We have this incredible defense mechanism that we don't know what organisms are going to hit it, right? What the next plague is going to be. And so we've evolved this immune system that is incredibly diverse. And it's one of the most genetically diverse part of our genomes. And so it is also adaptable and it has memory. So our T cells can see something. So in the same way that vaccines work, we can see an infection and we can remember, our immune system remembers that you had this infection so that you can fight it off better and faster and stronger the next time you see it. So how does this work for cancer? Well, the problem with cancer is that it is also, these are very diverse cells. There's a tremendous amount of heterogeneity. And what I mean by that is that within someone's own tumor, there's a lot of variation. Not all of those cells are identical. There's a lot of genetic variation and protein variation within those cells. So there's heterogeneity within a person. And then there's heterogeneity between people. So not everybody's breast cancer is the same. In fact, they're tremendously different. And so we have to understand both the differences between people and within people, and then how do we adapt that for an individual person's immune system? And so being able to have techniques and tools to be able to get at that tremendous amount of diversity really helps us understand how we can then harness that in order to fight an individual's own cancer.
As if the job isn't hard enough, all of that diversity and all the different people. I mean, I'm sure on the one hand, that is at the heart of the challenge and the difficulty. And on the other hand, it's probably central to what makes every day different and really interesting is that it's probably not one size fits all, which I guess it'd be a lot easier if it were one size fits all, wouldn't it?
Well, the good news is that there are some molecules, there are some targets that are in common across different types of cancers and across different breast cancers. And so many of those are currently being targeted in immune therapeutics for a variety of different types of cancers. Some of these are already FDA approved and are being worked on and studied in great detail in breast cancer as well.
Yeah, that is excellent. That makes it, that's a good thing to know. So two things are going through my mind that I'm going to park for a moment. One is the diversity, and there's a question I want to ask you about that in regards to your team. But also, I'm always fascinated by the lessons that get learned, and I've heard this over and over again in these conversations with researchers on how what one can learn in one area of cancer research, it can sometimes be applied in other areas of research. And so maybe we can talk about that as well. But first, just finishing up on this idea of immunotherapy. You said earlier, I think you said that immunotherapy is hot right now, something like that. What did you mean by that?
Well, there are a number of different immune therapies that have recently been FDA approved for different cancer types, not yet for breast cancer, but for melanoma, for lung cancer, for head and neck cancers, and others. And what we're finding is that those immune therapies, either alone or in combination with more standard chemotherapies or possibly other target therapies, are starting to show very impressive responses but only in a subset of patients. And what we're trying to figure out now is who is responding to these therapies and why? Why is it that 10% of patients might have a terrific response and have a very long-term response in melanoma or in melanoma, the numbers are much higher. But why is it only some people that are having those responses and other tumors are not responding as well? And that is a lot of what we're trying to figure out now is who's going to respond to these therapies and why, because that's going to help us make them work better.
In addition, one of the most interesting things that I've learned in these conversations, which I just mentioned a moment ago, is how leading researchers like you connect work across cancers. It's kind of like being the ultimate investigator, finding clues in one part of the body or one type of cancer and divining how they may or may not be applied to other parts. Am I interpreting what you're saying correctly? Is that your approach as well? Are you seeing clues from maybe say immunotherapy that's effective in other types of cancers and really considering how those findings could apply to breast cancer?
Absolutely. The entire field learned a tremendous amount from the experience in melanoma. Melanoma is considered to be one of the most immunogenic tumors. And so many of the drugs that have been developed for immune therapy that activate T cells, targets like CTLA-4 and PD-1, PD-L1, those types of targets, many of those were developed initially for melanoma, and that's where the initial FDA approvals were for. And it's because that is a very immunogenic tumor. Breast cancer, in contrast, has long been considered not very immunogenic, but there are certainly subtypes, and the triple negative subtype in particular is probably more immunogenic, and so many of these immune therapies are now being studied actively in triple negative breast cancer, but there's some very recent data that suggests that they may also have activity in hormone receptor positive or estrogen receptor positive breast cancers as well, so that is also being evaluated quite actively.
Let's talk as well about the diversity that you talked about. That seems to mirror, if I kind of interpreted your lab correctly, your approach to your team, which seems to be very wide-ranging. I mean, you're leveraging collective expertise in breast cancer genomics and bioinformatics, mathematical modeling, high-throughput protein display, mass spectrometry, and immune monitoring. And who knows, maybe you've even added two or three since then. Is that accurate? Am I kind of interpreting that right? Do you why the diversity on the team? How do you think about that composition, and what does it all kind of add up to for you?
So what we've been trying to tackle is, how do you measure the diversity of that immune response? How do you measure all the different antibodies and T cells and what they're recognizing and what tumor proteins they're seeing, and how that varies between people? To be able to do that, look, T cells have an incredible potential variation, you know, maybe 10 to the 14th potential different T cell receptors that can be seen. So how can we evaluate this? You've got, you know, 25, 30,000 different genes encoding proteins as well within the genomes, and then you have all the mutations. So how can we tackle that? So to do that requires an ability to measure proteins and to measure T cells in a high throughput way. And so what we've done is take an infrastructure for doing we can display thousands of different proteins in a variety of different ways to the T cells so that we can measure those T cells and those antibody levels. And then we also require the expertise of all those genomicists and bioinformatics, which are people who can interpret all the computational data that comes across from all the sequencing, the millions and millions of sequencing reads from tumor samples. And how can we distill that to say, what is that immune system and that person really seeing? And so we have to take people with different amounts of skill sets in different technologies, whether it's proteins or whether it's genomics, whether it's computational abilities, whether it's mathematical abilities of how do you predict what are going to be the immune responses. And then we try to create this integrated pipeline to say, okay, in a given person, what are they reacting to? If they're getting immune therapies, what are they reacting to and why? If they're responding to those therapies, what are they responding to and how does that tell us to build the next version of those immune therapies or those vaccine therapies?
What drew you to this area of research?
I started working on immunology back in medical school. I did a PhD in immunology, and I've always been fascinated with vaccines. They've changed the course of human events, our ability to survive the plague and our ability to survive smallpox and our ability, you know, our future ability perhaps to survive, you know, Ebola or HIV or other types of therapies. So much of this have rested on vaccine development and how are we going to survive, you know, the next influenza, things like that. And so I've always been fascinated with how vaccines work and how we can make them better and how the T cells work. And so our initial work was really focused on infectious diseases, obviously, because that's where we've learned the most about how T cells work, and in particular for chronic viruses where the T cells get what we call exhausted, and I would suspect many people can understand that. You know, if a T cell is being stimulated for a long time, it gets tired, literally. And so how do you reactivate that? How do you wake that back up? How do you teach it to see the target again, to reactivate it? And so we've taken a lot of the lessons from infectious diseases and classic vaccine development, and then applying that to cancer, because the system and the problem is very similar. And so I have been, I can't explain why, but I've been fascinated by this for many, many years. And been interested really in how can we target this really for breast cancer.
I was going to ask to that part. So that's a really, really interesting world kind of life / historical view. And you're right. I mean, when you phrase it that way, thinking about vaccines and their impact on the course of human history and human events, you know, that's pretty powerful stuff. Did you get to cancer or breast cancer? Was it intentional? Was it accidental? Was it that, well, you know, okay, if a vaccine took care of smallpox and, you know, vaccines dealt with polio, well, what's the next big one? And, you know, hard to get much bigger than cancer. Let's go there. Did that happen intentionally, or was it just kind of where you ended up?
Well, honestly, it was more directly inspirational. When I was doing my internship and residency in Boston at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and my fellowship at Dana-Farber, I was really actually early on in my internship, I was originally thinking I would study infectious diseases, and I was just so inspired both from patients that I had and also from the oncologists who inspired me in their, you know, incredible dedication and understanding of their patients and the fight that they were in. And I just decided that I would really love to study breast cancer and to study how cancer evolves. And at the time, you know, tumor immunotherapy, it's always been sounded like a great idea, but in practice it had not worked very well for decades, really. And we'd always had these hints that there were some responses, you know, in other tumor types, like in melanoma or lung cancer or others. But it's only been really in the last 5 to 8 years where we're starting to see consistent responses in patients, and really starting to understand who might really benefit from targeted immunotherapies. And so for me, though, it was a deeply personal inspiration from the patients that I was seeing through my internship and residency. And I said, yes, I would love to have the, you know, the privilege to be able to take care of breast cancer patients for the rest of my career.
Does that worry you at all if it doesn't work to the extent that we all hope that it does? I mean, it works in you know, that it doesn't go as to the full end that you want it to, or no, you're not encumbered by thoughts like that?
Well, you know, I've been in practice long enough that I recognize that many exciting new developments take time to mature, right? When we find some evidence of responses, that tells us a direction that we can go in and we can chip away at it to make them better, to improve them. And then periodically we get, you know, the larger breakthroughs, the trastuzumab, which is Herceptin, right, that reduces recurrence rates and we use routinely in clinical practice, the hormonal therapies, the endocrine therapies that we use to reduce recurrences. So we see sort of the more major breakthroughs in breast cancer care. And I think that we're on, you know, the cusp of this for immune therapies. We're going to find lower response rates perhaps than we want to see initially, but then that'll point us in the directions of how to improve it and how to make it better. And I recognize that these are really hard problems. If they were simple, we would have figured them out already. And they take time and they take persistence to chip away at them. But the fact that we're seeing responses now really, I think, is very encouraging to tell us the directions we need to go.
Yeah, that is the inspiring part, no doubt. So in terms of where to go, what is next? Looking at the research specifically, what are your next steps, and what are the upcoming kind of milestones that you would highlight and say, okay, check back in at this around this time, because there are, these are the upcoming milestones that we really are tracking and we'll understand whether to make a right turn or a left turn.
So I think probably the first immune therapy that we're going to get mature data on is the use of checkpoint blockade therapies, which are these targeted therapies that activate T cells. And we're going to start to see the more mature data coming out from triple negative breast cancer trials, the KEYNOTE trials and other trials of looking at these targeted agents in triple negative breast cancers, both as single agent therapies where the response has actually been low, but measurable. Some people do respond very well. And we're now starting to look at the combination with different types of chemotherapies and others. After that, I think we're going to start seeing these agents looked at and evaluated in detail in hormone receptor positive breast cancers as well. There's exciting data from the I-SPY clinical studies looking at improvements in response rates before surgery of different immune therapies, both for triple negative breast cancer and also for hormone receptor positive breast cancer. So we will start to see those. I think that coming down the line will be T-cell targeted therapies, whether they target individual mutations and alterations in individual patients' tumors or more broadly across multiple different targets across different breast cancers. Both of those are being evaluated, and I think that both adoptive T-cell therapies, where they take T-cells from people, make them better, stronger, more effective, and then give them back, or vaccine targets, trying to create the T cell responses within a person rather than trying to do it in the test tube and then giving them back. I think we're going to start to see those trials coming forward, those early phase trials in breast cancer, across a number of different breast cancer sets. I think that where a lot of the excitement is, can we really reduce recurrence rates with these? Can we improve response rates both before surgery and after surgery to reduce recurrence and reduce the chance of these cancers coming back? Many of these therapies are obviously being evaluated in women with more advanced disease initially. So we may see some of these clinical trial data coming out before surgery and also in women with early stage breast cancers after surgery and immunotherapies to reduce the risk of recurrence, as well as in women with stage 4 or more advanced breast cancers as well. What we've been working on has been trying to identify what are those targets. What are really good targets that we can think about for vaccine development? And when I talk about vaccines, I'm talking about therapeutic vaccines, so to treat patients who already have breast cancer, although certainly there is this potential down the line to try to prevent breast cancers. But I think our first goals are going to try to reduce the recurrence rates of breast cancer, whether we use that for vaccines or whether we use that to stimulate T cells and try to give activated T cells as infusions, for example, to reduce the risk of disease recurrence is what we've been working on developing.
Two thoughts are going through my mind. One is what you just described at the end there, and the researchers and scientists who, there's such a wide spectrum, and there are the scientists and researchers who are working to try to prevent breast cancer in the first place, and that's incredible work, obviously. And then maybe on the other side, there are folks like you who are trying to help with how do we stop reoccurrence and how do we address patients when they have breast cancer or when they have had it, and that's got its own set of challenges. So anywhere on that spectrum, boy, there's a ton of work, which brought me to my second thought. I now understand why you would be in Arizona working in the dead heat of Arizona summer, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got a lot on your plate.
Well, you know, I work at the Biodesign Institute here at Arizona State University, and it is a research institute with an incredible diverse array of scientists with different expertise. So I have physicists, and I have chemists and engineers and biologists and immunologists. And the idea is if you put people with this type of, diverse research approaches and background, and you put them together in a building, what happens? And so what I've been able to do is have people who know a tremendous amount of filtering genomic data using, high throughput computational methods and mathematical modeling and engineers who can try to engineer robots that can try to understand this diversity so that we can express the proteins that we want and do the protein arrays that we need to be able to measure those T cells and measure those antibodies. And so, yes, we're in the absolute heat of summer right now, but the rest of the year, Arizona's a terrific place to be and to work. It is very exciting. It's a very technology-driven institution, I would say. We have a lot of exposure to the latest technologies to be able to do some of these analyses, and it is a very exciting place to work.
It sounds like it. In fact, the thought that's going through my mind is if this science thing, doesn't work out for you or you get tired of it at some point, maybe we just set up live webcams in the faculty dining room. I can only imagine what those conversations are like among physicists and biologists and chemists and everyone discussing and arguing. That might, we've got a great reality show there, I think, at the very least.
Perhaps, although there might be more talk about baseball than you think.
Good. Well, that's because the Diamondbacks are having a great year. Come on.
Yeah, there is that, although I'm a Red Sox fan. But one other thing I want to mention is that I have a joint appointment with the Mayo Clinic here in Arizona, and I am a practicing breast cancer medical oncologist. And that gives us the opportunity to do that translational bridge that we talked about. How do you bring these latest, technologies that people are developing in the lab, and how do we actually try to bring this into patient care? And I think it's been very important for me in my career and my path to have an active clinical practice. This is really important. I learned so much from my patients about what works and what doesn't, and what are really the concerns that they're seeing, and to really understand how the cancer behaves and how the immune system is behaving, and what are the primary concerns that my patients have for treating breast cancers, and that has been really, really important for me in my practice and in my research practice, and how can I bring that into the laboratory and try to understand this. And so here I have that opportunity to do that translational bridge and make it work.
And with the work that you're doing at ASU and with the Mayo Clinic, tell me as well, what role does BCRF play in your work?
Well, I think one of the important things that BCRF has done for many investigators, myself included, has been to help us study the hard problems, right? Many of the grants and the federal grants that we have and that we get extend work that we've already done. But if you really want to branch in new directions, if you want to try something challenging, if you want to have a high-risk, more high-reward type of research, it really does require funding support from an organization such as BCRF that recognizes that we need to have that kind of pilot funding to be able to go off into a riskier direction to try to get the more innovative therapies out there for patients. And so for me, that has been really critical. The support from BCRF has been critical for us to be able to evaluate different targets for breast cancer and breast cancer immunotherapies and be able to support some of the more innovative research, I would say, in my laboratory.
Well, that's terrific. It's terrific that their efforts are so actionable, I guess, or you're putting them into action in such such a directed way. That's very meaningful. Thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This was great.
That was my conversation with Dr. Karen Anderson. What a key point that was about vaccines and human events. I totally felt how that simple idea could inspire a lifetime of work. My thanks to Dr. Anderson for joining and you for listening. To learn more about breast cancer research or to subscribe to our podcast, go to bcrfcure.org/podcasts.